T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
The following is a special KMOX sports presentation. Welcome to the Strike Zone. Powered by Graybar, your source for electrical and data communication products for more than 150 years. Now, the Strike Zone on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Outstanding to be with you. Welcome into a Thursday night here on KMOX. Chance to talk a little ball. We've had a busy week with the four-game series between the Cards and the Phillies. We've got the Pirates coming up tomorrow night. Next hour, 7:15, we'll bring in Rob Biertemple. He covers the Pirates for the Athletics. We'll talk a bit about how they've been going, what we can expect this weekend from Pittsburgh. This hour, we've got Will Leach coming up in a few minutes. So Will has a new book out, and we'll tell you about that. And it's not a sports book. It's a novel, which is interesting, but we'll talk about the Cardinals' start to the season and talk a bit more about the National League in general as well. So Will Leach coming up in a few minutes. I want to start with this series, right? I mean, the Cardinals split a series with the Phillies.
Candidly, I don't think they're going to kill them.
Had plenty of interesting angles, had plenty of storylines to go through this one. The Cardinals got a big win today. Matt Carpenter with the really big at-bat. The three-run homer that didn't win the game, but certainly put you in position to be in extra innings at the end. And, of course, the wild pitch scores Tyler O'Neill, and the Cardinals get the 4-3 win. So the series split, probably fitting. I thought these two teams matched up pretty evenly over the course of the last 4 days. We've had a lot of chaos over the last couple of games with batters being hit. Super scary last night with Harper getting hit in the face, man. I mean, that is not great. I mean, you hate to see any player get hit in a dangerous way, right? I mean, you hate to see it around the hands and the wrist. You hate to see it anywhere near the head. And that was bad. And obviously, you know, Hennessy Cabrera didn't mean to hit him, but he did. And then hit Didi Gregorius with the next pitch and then bounced the next pitch 2 feet in front of the plate. And it got the Phillies hot and bothered, which is totally understandable, right? I understand being frustrated, angry, whatever, when a guy is out there and he has no idea where the ball is going, right? I mean, that's understandable. It is the major leagues. And, you know, this is not far off of a thought that Tony La Russa put out there many times. Like, hey, you're a big leaguer. You can't miss up by the head. You know, that's something that if you're going to be in this league, you can't keep doing. He used to get on his own players for it. He would obviously get after other teams when they came up high and tight near the head on his players. And I don't think there's anything wrong with having that concern and sharing that concern. Right? That's what Girardi was upset about last night, right? What he's upset about is this guy doesn't know where the ball's going and he's still in the game. Well, he had to stay in the game based on the stupid three-batter rule, which, by the way, is doing nothing to speed up games. The games have gotten longer since Major League Baseball put that in. I don't think that's the reason why. I'm just pointing out that it isn't helping. It's not making any difference at all. It was a shaky rule to begin with. And this right here, what we saw last night, was one of the reasons why baseball people didn't like it. Because if you have a guy out there that just doesn't know where the ball's going, you can't go get him. Mike Schilt could not go get him, even though he said after the game he wanted to. The only thing that could have happened there would be the umpires ejecting him. But if they don't read intent, they're not going to eject somebody. If they clearly think something is an accident, is a mistake, they're not going to eject you. Because, by the way, you set that standard and say, okay, well, the umpire can throw you out if you hit two guys in a row. So you're telling me that let's just go with Jacob DeGrom. He hits two batters in the first inning of his next start. They're going to throw him out, and everybody's going to be cool with that. Everybody's going to be cool with that. No, they're not. Say your closer does it in a two-run game in September. You're going to tell me that everybody's going to be cool with the umpires going, dude, you're out of here. No, we know it's not on purpose, but you got to go because you're wild. There's no way you can put that in the hands of the umpire. The rule just needs to be done away with. It's not making a difference anyway. Find some other way to keep the pace moving in the late innings. You know, I mean, there are other ways to do it, but this clearly hasn't made any difference. And then we get to today, and you have a game that goes along, and there's not much going on as far as anybody talking about retribution or anything like that. And in the ninth inning, Nolan Arenado gets hit up near the, you know, the upper back, right? I mean, kind of the top, you know, left shoulder, like his left shoulder blade, somewhere in that general area. It might have just been the shoulder and not the shoulder blade, but it was up in that area. And I don't know that it was on purpose. I mean, it could be an accident. You know, it's a really kind of a dicey situation to do that in on purpose. So if the Phillies did that on purpose there, probably not the best idea to put the winning run on base in the bottom of the ninth inning. I mean, you could say, well, they had faith that their closer who gets strikeouts would strike out. Oh, Tyler O'Neill, who strikes out a lot, fine. It's still a gamble. Are you really willing to risk losing the game to make your point? And then I'm going to ask this. What point is actually being made if you do drill Nolan Arenado on purpose? Because everybody on the planet knew that what Cabrera did was not intentional. The Phillies acknowledged it after the game. Not one of their guys said, nah, man, he did that on purpose. Nobody. Everybody knew it was a mistake. Everybody knew it was an accident. So why is there a need for payback? Why would you pay back something accidental? This is one of the areas where when it comes to unwritten rules, just get rid of it because everybody has their own interpretation. So you telling me that, again, flip the tables here. You telling me that if Hector Neris accidentally drills two guys for the Mets, that the Phillies are going to be totally cool if somebody drills Bryce Harper the next day? No, they're not. They're going to be pissed about it. It's stupid. The idea that you're going to exact revenge for a mistake, for clearly an unintentional act, is dumb. It doesn't make any sense. And I know that's the history, right? I know what the unwritten rules are. Somebody gets hit, somebody's got to get payback. Yeah, fine. You know what? You want to pay back an intentional meaning or even one that you think might be. I mean, it's probably not a good idea for the sport because the last thing you need is to risk somebody being hurt because somebody needs to feel better about themselves for getting payback about something. But if you had a problem with Cabrera, go get him. Risk your suspension and go fight the guy. Now, I'm not saying that's a good idea, by the way. I'm just saying that's a better idea than hitting someone else who did nothing wrong with a baseball. I've never in my life agreed with this version of the unwritten rules. I know that it exists. I know that it's existed for a long time. That doesn't mean it makes any rational sense. Here's the message. Your guy made two mistakes, so we have to hit one of your guys intentionally as payback. In what other walk of life does that make any damn sense? Try that at work. Somebody accidentally bumps into you, and the next day you need to knock them on their ass because, well, hey, they got to wake up. They should watch where they're going. It's so stupid. Again, I'm not saying that there's never a reason to try to send a message, even though I really do like the way that Major League Baseball has pushed that out because it is a health risk. You don't want star players. Like, if that ball had hit Arenado in the face, and it wasn't that far, it was no more than 4 or 5 inches from his face, and he goes on the injured list for the next 15 days or for the next month or whatever, that's too much of a risk for sending a message about what somebody did as an unintentional error. And that's the problem. It doesn't even have to be the face. You get somebody in the hand and break their hand. So now they're out 4 to 6 weeks because some other guy made a mistake. Like a totally unintentional pitch. Why is there revenge for an accident? Now, if you're going to tell me there should be punishment for an accident, if you're going to tell me that, like, for example, like the example I used earlier, that the umpires should say, dude, you don't have any idea where the ball's going. You're done for the day. See ya. Hit the showers. Okay. I can live with that. If you want to put in the rule that they have in the KBO, the Korean Baseball Organization, you know what their rule is? If a pitcher hits a batter in the head with a fastball, they are automatically ejected. Intentional or not, if you hit somebody in the head with a fastball, you're automatically ejected. You know what? I'm fine with that. It's not there. You can't retroactively argue it for now. But if you put that rule in, I'm not going to fight it. As long as we can establish it as a fair rule that will be enforced the same way every time, all the time, for every team. We can't leave this up to players and managers. If you're leaving it up to players and managers, then it's about feelings. And when people's feelings are all messed up, when people are angry, they don't think rationally, and they'll do something stupid. This is why you have to take it out of their hands in those regards. Because intent is impossible to read. I don't know that Hector Neris did it on purpose. It looked like it, but I don't know that he did. So take the interpretation out of it. Say, all right, you know what? We want to get rid of this. If you hit somebody in the head with a fastball, you're done. You're done. I'd be fine with that. But you can't treat it like it's the Wild West. You can't treat it like you're in Deadwood and we're just going to shoot it out in the middle of the street because somebody accused me of cheating. You calling me a cheater? I'm going to pull my... That's not how we work in this world. The authorities, in this case, Major League Baseball, should set the rules, set the standard, and then everybody else follows that. You don't get to have your own interpretation of how to handle a specific situation. All right, I got to stop because we got to talk baseball with my man, Will Leach. Of course, columnist for MLB.com. He's got a new book coming out. We'll tell you about that next up here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, back in on the Strike Zone tonight, of course, a part of Sports Open Line. Following was a pretty big win for the Cardinals this afternoon to split that four-game series. You look at a game with Aaron Nola on the mound on the other side, and typically you don't expect to get that one, but they got one today. So that was a good win. Now they head on to Pittsburgh, and we'll be talking all things Cardinals with our friend Will Leach. Good to have Will Leach, of course, columnist for MLB.com. You'll catch him in New York Magazine from time to time. And you'll also, by the way, catch his new book coming out next month. And this is the first one, Will, though, that is not like a sports book, right? I mean, we're talking about like an actual novel, which is so impressive because I can't even fathom like the discipline and the time that it takes to go ahead and put something like that completely out of from your own mind into print for people to read. That's awesome, man.
I mean, definitely a lot of deadlines where you're like, okay, if I get this done in time, I can watch the Cardinals game at 7. I'll be able to get there at that. But yeah, it's a novel that takes place in Athens, Georgia, where I live. It does take place during a college football game week, so there is some sports to it. But we've been very, very nice. Stephen King is like our lead blurb. He called it fantastic.
Wow.
And some people would really love it. So to the idea, I mean, as someone that like a lot of people spent much of my youth stealing my parents' copies of Stephen King books and reading them before I went to bed, it was pretty remarkable to hear such nice things from him. So the book is How Lucky, and it's out on May 11th, and I'm pretty excited.
Is there a particular place that you'd like to send people to pick up their copy or pick it up in advance?
I always encourage people to buy from the local bookstore. Left Bank Books is a great bookstore in St. Louis, but I understand that convenience, particularly in a pandemic, is a big deal. So if you buy my book from Amazon or wherever you do, I promise not to lecture you about it. I will be very appreciative that you did so at all.
It's great to hear that the initial reviews are very good, and I'm looking forward to checking it out myself. How long did it take you to get it done? I mean, honestly, I've written books before, but not like this. I mean, I've done like books on like scouting reports for baseball and prospects, things like that, but never anything where I'm trying to weave one story together from beginning to end. So how long did this take you to do?
the actual amount of riding isn't too bad, but then you have to go back later and fix all the stuff that you got wrong. One of the things that's really funny that I've learned, because I work in journalism, I write news stories and sports columns and so on, and so it's always been funny that like you always hear people say, well, that is stranger than fiction. You wouldn't believe that if you saw it in the book. And that's totally true. Like, if there's something in real life that's completely insane, everyone just kind of shrugs and says, well, life's kind of insane sometimes. But if it happens that way in a book, you have to be like, no, you have to have a reason for this. You can't just, like, toss in random crazy things happening all the time. It's actually really hard to make everything, because everything has to be logical in a novel the way that life is not logical. So there's a lot of things I had to go back and fix later. But ultimately, it was about a year and a half, two-year process of starting it and getting it finished and getting it fixed and then getting it sold. And it's being sold by HarperCollins. It's a big publisher. We're very lucky, and we're very excited.
That's awesome. And I didn't mention this at the beginning, but people should know this, but if they don't, they can follow you on Twitter at William F. Leach, and updates and links and everything will be there too. So you can always get updates on everything that's going on there. And I'll tell you, you know, it's one of the reasons why I love radio, Will, because, you know, if I do screw up, which is pretty much every day, it's like, here and gone, right? I don't have to, like, have somebody check it, and then I go back. Like, I mess it up. Like, say I say something stupid tonight, which will happen at least two or three times. I just get to correct it right there on the spot, or not, and then just laugh about it later. I'm kind of more free flow like that. I guess I'm saying I lack discipline to write really long, detailed things.
You know, it is worth noting that, remember, I worked in the world of blogs for a very long time, so I'm certainly aware of writing, of saying very stupid things and hoping it just passes by before anybody notices the very dumb thing you did. So, yeah, I certainly can appreciate that.
Yeah, it worked well, right? I mean, starts off with founding Deadspin, and obviously you're writing for MLB.com and New York Magazine, and now you've got a novel out, so that's awesome, man. What a hell of a progression for you. And, of course, we're all fans of you, so it's great to see the success happening as we go along. And I'm sure, as we always talk baseball with you, Will, I'm sure it was nice to see the win today from your perspective as a Cardinals fan who also happens to cover Major League Baseball. Because, as I said at the beginning, you don't typically look at a game where you're facing Aaron Nola and say, oh, yeah, this will be a great day for us.
Yeah, it certainly feels like they stole one today, to be honest, kind of feels like they got one stolen from them yesterday. So maybe it does kind of equal out. There was definitely a stretch around the fourth or fifth inning, where I thought, you know what, watching Nola last week, I thought, you know, he could probably shut the Cardinals out for 50 innings if he actually had to. And we almost got that proven today, right? We almost got that proven. I actually, Carpenter's homer was, again, this is the thing about Matt Carpenter, like, you know, a mild-mannered guy, like, you know, not hardly some, like, show-off guy, but, man, he always seems to provide big dramatic moments one way or the other for the Cardinals. The ongoing dramatic story of Matt Carpenter, I enjoyed Jim Edmonds' call on that, where he was like, if Roman Quinn would have pulled that home run back, I think Carpenter would just be like, forget it, never mind. I don't know how hard I hit, I can't get anything. But that's a big win, you know, I think particularly because, you know, now it gets you in kind of a stable position. You know, the thing that the Cardinals really kind of need to avoid is a losing streak puts them in a really bad spot, because right now they're still just kind of bouncing around 500. And a lot of this is going to feel like, okay, is it going to be a hot streak that's going to come, or is it going to be a cold streak that's going to come? Are you going to give yourself some slack moving forward in a division that I think is going to be pretty tight all year, or are you going to put yourself behind? And I think this is, I know it's just one game, but certainly losing 3 out of 4 at home against a team that is not also tearing the league apart, I think for unsettling reasons, was without Bryce Harper today, without their star. It feels like one you've got to get. Now you've got Pittsburgh coming up, and, you know, Pittsburgh has been playing a little bit better, but, you know, it feels like there's some winnable games there. And then you've got the Mets, a team that's also not all the way there. It feels like you can maybe get something going. You know, this is the thing about the Cardinals, right? Like, if they would have lost that, that would have been frustrating, but the first week and a half of the season, I will confess, I found pretty alarming. It wasn't so much that they were losing, though, because I was actually at one of the Marlins games, and even those Marlins games, it didn't really feel like the Cardinals dominated when they swept those games. The Cardinals generationally are good when they have good starting pitching, and not when they don't. And that's just, you either have Matt Morris or you have Kip Wells, and like that, those are the Cardinals teams that you generally have. And so when their starting pitching isn't going well, everything else gets out of whack. So to see that settled down, it feels like you're getting back to what the Cardinals do well and have solid starting pitching. The bullpen you know, there's a lot of talent. You still see too many walks, but the bullpen is not something I'm particularly worried about. It puts everybody in a good position when you have good starting pitching and allows some of these bats to kind of figure themselves out a little bit. So the fact that the starting pitching is stabilized, I think, is the most encouraging thing for the Cardinals, because if you got that set, then you can figure out the other stuff.
100% agree, Will. When I was talking about the team at the beginning of the year, understandably, there's an obsession with offensive production. I mean, because we know what they're missing. And even with Arenado coming in, we know that there are still a lot of positions that we're waiting to see what you'll get. We don't know what you're going to get in a couple of outfield spots. We don't really know what we're always going to get from, say, Paul DeJong or the days when Carpenter was playing. I wasn't as worried about that. I was more worried that the starting pitching wasn't going deep into games and then the bullpen was having to carry innings. And until about 9 days ago, the bullpen had actually pitched more innings than the starting rotation. But now these last 9 days, and tomorrow will be the 10th day with John Gant going in Pittsburgh, that would be two full times through the rotation with a good outing from every one of those, where the low-end outing is five innings, and obviously the other ones are now getting into the seven, eight, nine innings.
Yeah, and you know that's the baseline. Like from that, the Cardinals are net, like, there's certain pieces that get figured out. It doesn't matter if Dylan Carlson has a rookie of the year season or Matt Carpenter starts to get hot. They are not going to have a good year. Like, this is not a team that's going to be able to bash you in the submission. You know, this is just a team that's just got to have that starting pitching. So if they can get the starting pitching, you start looking at the lineup a little bit. And listen, obviously, there's been some frustration. I think Goldschmidt is hitting the ball hard, but he's not necessarily getting the results.
Yeah.
DeJong has been somewhat similar. And, you know, there's always, like, kind of the outfield issue. But, you know, there's actually, for all the worries about the offense, there are guys that I would argue are perhaps overperforming what we might have expected going into the season. I think Dylan Carlson looks like an all-star right now. Forget rookie of the year. Like, he looks like a potential all-star player right now. And to me, one of the big revelations has been Tommy Edman. Like, we know what Tommy Edman can do. We've seen that, but we did not see it in 2020. And,
right.
You know, with letting Colton Wong go and really putting not just your playing second base to Edman, but you're our leadoff guy is a lot for a guy that really did struggle in 2020. And he is hitting the ball hard. He's playing terrific defense wherever he has been. Edman, I think, has quietly been like, you know, this is, if you're going to have this stretch where you're still kind of figuring out, okay, who's going to be the third outfielder? You know, get Bader back. Yeah, the outfield is still a situation that's kind of in flux. You need guys to, like, get you through this period. I think Yadier Molina was doing that for the first 3 weeks. I really feel like Edman, kind of what he's doing right now, that's a huge question mark that was coming into the season. They let Colton Wong go, and you're like, okay, I hope Edman, who barely had a very low on-base percentage last year and really did kind of struggle, if he wasn't able to get that spot, what's the point of getting Arenado and Gold out of this lineup if there's nobody on base for him? And so Edman, to me, has been a big, big, big encouraging thing for the Cardinals right now. Not just the numbers, but you watch him play, and it's like, okay, this guy is a settling influence on this team. That's a big deal. I think it's going to get him a long way here.
We'll be talking more ball with Will Leach when we come back here on Strike Zone.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Get ready for the Cards and Pirates tomorrow night. Ameren Pregame Show 440. First pitch 5:35. Hear it here on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals. KMOX.
All right, getting back to our conversation with Will Leach from MLB.com. Will, let's get back to current events here. The Cardinals in this first month, you know, they're 13-12. That's not perfect, but if I had said on opening day that you would get to April 29th and Nolan Arenado would have an OPS in the low 700s and Paul Goldschmidt's OPS would be in the 600s, you'd be thinking, wow, that's definitely got to be a losing record. At least that's what I would have been thinking. So I guess we should look on the bright side, and you're 13-12 despite some of that.
Yeah, particularly because, you know, it's not like, and you're not getting the wow, here comes Justin Williams hitting the ball hard, or here's Austin Dean, or, you know, or Lane Thomas or so on. Like, that big, huge question mark about the outfield outside, really, of Carlson has absolutely not been settled at all. Like, we've like, the idea that, like, at one point, listen, I love little Scotty Hurst. I think he played hard. I love seeing him on there. But if, like, if Scotty Hurst is the I know his name is Scott, but he just feels like a Scotty. There's something about if he's the answer to the question, you're probably asking the wrong question. And I think that, you know, those are the big worries, right? The outfield, they haven't resolved that yet. And you've got Arenado not hitting great, and you've got Goldschmidt, who again is hitting the ball hard, but not really getting the results. And obviously Carpenter has had his woes. The fact that you are one game over 500 right now, particularly when the starting pitching had like two weeks where things were completely out of whack, it's a good spot to be in, particularly because you look at a team like Milwaukee, who's in first place right now. It feels like they have some offensive issues, actually, but for what it's worth, those pitchers are not – they're not going to end up with a 2.3 ERA for their starters all season. Like, there's some regression for them coming pitching, too. It just feels that, like, there's more upside with this Cardinals team right now. You see them at 13-12. You're like, you know what? They feel like they played worse than a 13-12 team, but the fact that they've gotten through that, you know there's more talent that is more than a 13-12 team. So I think there's reason to be excited moving forward.
Hey, by the end of Sunday, Will, the Cardinals could be in first place just for the fact that the Brewers are playing the Dodgers starting tonight.
Yeah.
They've got four games against the – no, the Dodgers are not whole. I mean, they got a bunch of guys out, but they're still winning. If you get some help from the Dodgers and you have a decent weekend against the Pirates, who have played pretty well lately. I think they won three series in a row and then split two with Kansas City. So they've not been as bad as people thought. They're probably not as good as a 12-12 record, but they've not been as bad as we all thought. But that's also one of those things like, you know what, though, it's April. Like, you know, they're not going to be good. And teams like, say, the Yankees, for example, are not going to finish in last place or second to last place or whatever. I mean, that's one of those deals where Pittsburgh is still going to be what they're going to be. But you are catching them at a time when they've been playing decent ball.
Yeah, but, you know, I think the key for the Cardinals in this month, like, what's the old adage? You can't win your division in April, but you can certainly lose it.
Yeah.
And there have been many opportunities where this could have gone out of hand. I've had a lot of frustration just watching all of these games because I think – and also part of that's just being on social media during the game, which is just never a good idea. But I would say that, generally speaking, it doesn't feel like the Cardinals have played very well. It just doesn't feel like this is – we've seen great Cardinals teams. We've seen division-winning Cardinals teams. And generally speaking, they are playing at a higher level than the Cardinals are right now. But you can – A, they're still right in the mix. They're a game over 500. They've got some winnable games coming up. And B, you can see how this could get better. And, like, Goldschmidt's not going to hit like this all year. No, it's not going to hit like this all year. You can see the upside to that. So there's no question. You just kind of want to – to me, this is one of the really key things that Yadier Molina did in the first two or three weeks.
Yes.
The idea that, like, he's obviously – like, I love Yadi. He's probably not going to hit 350 all year when he comes back. But what he did was, during a period where the team was still trying to figure itself out and was struggling a bunch, he kept coming up with huge moments exactly when the Cardinals needed him. So if it comes to, like, September, and even if Yadi's numbers go back down, he doesn't hit like that again the rest of the year, if the Cardinals end up like a game, winning the division by a game or getting into wild card by a game, we're going to need to remember what Yadi did in April to keep this team afloat when they were really struggling.
Absolutely. Well, let's zoom out to close here. We'll zoom out on the National League as a whole. And again, I want to repeat, it's only April. I don't think a lot of these things are real. Like, I don't think the San Francisco Giants are real. They're 16-9. They're tied with the Dodgers for the best record in the National League. I don't think that's real, even though they have a great run differential and there's some signs that maybe it's not that fluky. I don't think that 640 winning percentage for them is real. But nobody else is that much is pulling away. Like, the Brewers are 14-10. The Padres are 14-12, where the Cardinals are 13-12. Nobody in the East has a winning record right now. It's been kind of super mediocre in the National League so far.
Yeah, I think you can make an argument the early story in the National League has been that the East, the hope of it, remember, the idea of the East was like, wow, there are four really good teams that are going to battle it out
right.
in there. And then the last place team was the one that went to the NLDS last year, like Miami.
Right.
Like the idea is this is going to be like a really tough division. And boy, every single one of those teams looks like they have big, big holes and things that are not really going to be able to be fixed all that. And, you know, that Mets defense is atrocious. And there's issues with the bullpen. Now, Philadelphia, we've seen Philadelphia's actually looked the best against the Cardinals than they have against anybody else. And the Nationals, in particular, look like it. Like, I'm not sure the Marlins aren't going to finish with a better record than the Nationals are. That team looks like it's got some problems. And the Braves, you know, some of the pitching issues they've had and the rotation and the lineup issues they had. None of those teams look like, oh, well, we got to give a wild card to one of those teams in the East. It looks like it's going to be, you know, the hope for the NL Central this year was going to be, okay, it's all going to be a muddle, but if you can win like 87, 88 games, that's probably going to get you enough to win the division. It kind of looks like the NL East is going to be like that right now, which is really kind of remarkable. And either that, maybe that means now you're not chasing the Mets or the Phillies. You're talking about the Giants for a second wild card spot. You're just chasing the teams in your division. It's scrambled it up in a way. And I think this is probably good, right? This has been a thing with baseball that people have kind of gotten frustrated through in the last few years. It always felt like you could pick the division winners before the season started.
Yeah.
And it was just a scramble for the wild card. It absolutely does. Like the Dodgers are obviously there, but like, for hell, look at the American League. Like the American League, the Yankees are wobbly.
Right.
The West is a mess. And the Central, I mean, no offense to Mike Matheny, but I'm not sure I believe that Kansas City is going to remain in first place all year, though I think they're a little spicier than we may have anticipated. But there's no, like, the Dodgers look like a great team, and nobody else does, which to me is good. This is what we want from baseball, right? And I think it puts you in a situation where the Cardinals can have a moment like this where they can figure themselves out and figure out what the best versions of themselves are and get there and still not have the division or even the wild card have gotten away from them.
The only thing I'll say, Will, is that at some point here in the next, let's call it 8 weeks or so, we need a couple of teams to fall by the wayside definitively, so there are at least some sellers out there. It's rough when everybody's close.
Yeah, I think the Nationals may be that team. And also, I think that Max Scherzer is going to be the trade. Max Scherzer and Trevor Story maybe are going to be the trade deadline guys. That Washington team looks like they do not look like a good team at all. And so I think it was one of the reasons the Cardinals have been struggling so much that they didn't play better against a team that really looks wobbly right now. So that's a team, like, talk about a seller of deadline. The Nationals have some stuff to sell, and I think would have some value there. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. But to me, I think the Cardinals are, after the first 2 weeks of the season, I thought, yeah, this may be a rough one. This may be the thing that the projection systems were warning us about. I feel like things have stabilized a little bit, and I think they're in a good position moving forward.
Will, love talking ball with you, man. Once again, congrats on the novel. It's called How Lucky. It's coming out, May 11th? Is that right? Wait, yes. May 11th when
May
it's 11th. First available?
Pre-order everywhere. Pre-orders are great. I discovered this in the book process. Pre-orders are almost better than orders.
Ah.
Like, they encourage everyone to go get one. So by all means, pre-order, and people can send me, I'll send them a book. There's no virtual, there's no tours because we're all, you know, we're still a little bit left in COVID land. But what we are, we can send book plates and sign it for people. It's an exciting time. I think people will like it.
Very, very cool. I also know that you're going to be playing the role of Coach Leach tonight. So good luck. Good luck on the ball field.
Listen, I'm just saying, these six-year-olds aren't going to win games if you don't just scream at them for 3 hours. I mean, I worry about their self-esteem with your therapist in 20 years, okay? We're trying to win ball games right now.
Attaboy. Get them, TLR.
I love it. These little kids are great. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Will Leach. You can find him, by the way, on Twitter, at William F. Leach. And, of course, you'll find his work regularly for you baseball fans at MLB.com. All right, stick around. Coming up, we got a lot more baseball. In fact, it's all we got here on the Strike Zone on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, time to let you know what's on deck. Sponsored by Chesterfield Fence and Deck. You can find them at chesterfieldfence.com. What's on deck is more baseball. We're going to talk to Rob Biertemple of The Athletic. He covers the Pirates for them. So coming up at 7:15, we'll start to preview this weekend series in Pittsburgh. We're also going to talk about another outfielder who's suddenly struggling badly again. Every time you feel like a light is starting to turn on, it gets turned off. We get to that coming up after the news on KMOX.
Welcome back to the The Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, back in on the second hour here. It is the Strike Zone. In a few minutes, we'll be talking a bit about the Pittsburgh Pirates. Cardinals are taking on the Pirates Friday through Sunday in Pittsburgh. We're going to catch up with Rob Biertemple from The Athletic, who covers the Pirates. Just get kind of the latest. You know, they've actually been playing some decent ball here for the last couple of weeks. I know they won three series in a row, and then they just split a two-game series with the Royals, and the Royals have the best record in Major League Baseball. So the Pirates have actually been playing a little good baseball here. We'll find out what's kind of leading into that. What's going on with that? Why is that happening? Like, you know, I mean, I've been watching a little bit from a distance, but we'll get a better report on that from Rob Biertemple from The Athletic in just a couple of minutes. First up, though, let's talk about Building the Future, sponsored by Graybar. And Building the Future here, we got to talk about the Cardinals outfield again. And I hate that we have to keep having the conversation, but we just have this revolving door right now of an offensive spot that's just not giving you production. And, you know, look, Dylan Carlson has been great since moving into the number two spot. You know, over the last week, he's hitting 400. He's, you know, got a 900 OPS. I mean, look, Dylan's numbers on the season are good. Forget just the last week. I mean, even with the 0-for today, you know, Carlson's got really solid numbers on the season. I think even after today, you know, he's an 871 OPS. And, you know, he's drawn 10 walks on the season, which is phenomenal at this point in the year. So, you know, he's doing a really nice job. You've got some consistency in terms of production there. Tyler O'Neill's been hot since coming back from the injured list, which is great. So hopefully he can continue to be at least reasonably productive. You know, I don't think we should continue to expect what we've seen here in the last three or four days. But still, you know, you can hope for at least some power production. But now the concern, to me anyway, is shifting towards Justin Williams. There was a while going there where he was hitting the ball hard and he was starting to get some doubles. He had a couple of home runs. And like, all right, maybe we're seeing some signs. But then here in the last week, Williams is now 1-for-17 with 9 strikeouts. And, you know, that's pretty clearly a problem. And I don't know what the answer is. You know, the solutions that you could potentially come up with at the moment, because Harrison Bader is not coming back now. When Bader comes back, he will certainly play. And it would seem likely that at least initially you would see him and O'Neill and Carlson in the outfield, and they'll give Bader a chance to show whether or not he's going to hit before they decide to start playing matchups and things along those lines. But, you know, I was kind of hoping that Williams was going to be a guy that could step up with an opportunity, and the strikeouts are just continuing to be a problem. And, you know, when you're striking out almost half the time, and it's more than half the at-bats, it's not quite half the plate appearances. Over the last week, that's not on the season. But even on the season, you know, 27 strikeouts in 65 at-bats is a pretty high number. And while some of his batted ball data has been good, right, he's hit the ball hard, it's kind of the same thing we were talking about with Matt Carpenter, where, yeah, okay, no doubt, you're hitting the ball hard, but are you hitting the ball often enough? And that's where we are, I think, with both of those guys. I think there's a similar profile right now between Justin Williams and Matt Carpenter as far as what's happened so far this season. And the difference being, of course, that Williams is a young player that you don't really have a full grasp on yet, right? I mean, he's a young player that, you know, you want to see more of. You'd like to see what happens if he plays a lot. Because, again, when you look at it, that average exit velocity is in the top 15% in Major League Baseball. His hard hit rate is in the top 14%. In Major League Baseball. And the hard hit rate is just the percentage of balls that you hit that are hit hard. The problem here is the swing and miss rate and the strikeout rate. So on the season, the strikeout rate for Justin Williams ranks in the bottom 5% in Major League Baseball. The whiff rate, that's the swing and miss rate, is in the bottom 6%. So that's why you're not seeing the production from him. Like you have the hard hit ball. And actually, Justin Williams' walk rate is really good. Look at his on-base percentage. His on-base percentage is more than 100 points higher than his average. That's fantastic. But we're still at this point now where they're going to need more. They're going to need more from, you know, somebody. Whether it's Justin Williams or Matt Carpenter or Austin Dean or, you know, whoever else it could be. they're going to need more from another lineup spot. And I've really been hoping, and I'm not writing off Justin Williams. I mean, he's a young guy. If he's had a bad week, you don't write somebody off. But again, it's still one of those deals where, all right, you know, the positives are, yes, he hits the ball hard. The negatives are he hits too many balls on the ground, right? I mean, his launch angle. So your launch angle is something that people hate. You should understand it, though. You can hate if you think too many hitters are trying to do it. Although, I got to get to this. You know, I'm going to do this later in the show. I forgot to do this earlier in the show. We're going to do this later. But I saw a tweet yesterday that showed that basically the way hitters hit in terms of how many balls are hit in the air, how many balls are hit on the ground, how many balls are line drives, basically hasn't changed since 2002. You might remember that in the early 2000s, guys were hitting 73 home runs, and it was arguably the greatest offensive era in the history of the sport. So later this hour, we will talk a bit about that and why the offense is struggling as much as it is now. Hint, hint, it's the pitchers. Anyway, we'll get to that later. But part of the problem with Williams is that he's hitting the ball on the ground. His average launch angle is 4.3 degrees. Those are ground balls. You don't want to hit the ball on the ground when you're hitting it hard, because as soon as it hits the ground, it slows down. You want to hit the ball in the air when you hit it hard. Now, if you don't hit the ball particularly hard, all right, maybe sometimes it is better to hit it on the ground. But even then, still, the hits are in the air, as everybody likes to say. So Williams is hitting too many balls on the ground. He strikes out too much. And that combination has led to basically the lack of production that we've been talking about, right? I mean, it's led to great numbers with batted ball data, but not a lot to show for it. And it's interesting in that it's not all that different from the profile that we've seen from Matt Carpenter this year, who has absolutely hit the ball hard. I mean, his average exit velocity is better than Justin Williams. He's hitting the ball on average 94.9 miles an hour. I mean, you're talking about top 5% in Major League Baseball. But the strikeout rate has been too high. And of course, he's, you know, it's one thing that John Mozeliak talked about last Friday. He's also very predictable as to where he hits the baseball, and the defenses are there. So you got a combination of things that are going into that. So the truth is that, or the bottom line, I guess you could say, the simplest statement here to close up this point is somebody else is going to have to start hitting. And maybe the best solution in all this, or the best thing to hope for, is that Arenado and Goldschmidt start to hit, because they really haven't. Over the last week, neither one of them has very good numbers. Goldie's numbers the last week are a little bit better, but you know, Arenado's been slumping a little bit. You're going to need both of those guys to get back to themselves. That will probably be the key to the offense. It may not be the next guy stepping up. It might just be that those two guys have to get back to the back of the baseball card. All right, let's talk about the Pirates coming up next. Rob Beer-Temple from The Athletic is going to join us next here on KMOX.
Welcome back to The Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, let's talk a little baseball heading into the weekend. Cardinals taking on the Pirates Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And after a little bit of a rough start, the Pirates have played pretty good baseball here lately. And happy to have Rob Beer-Temple with us from The Athletic to talk a bit about what we should expect this weekend. And first of all, Rob, I think this is the first time we've spoken on the air, so thank you for doing this. I've been reading your work for a long time as I try to keep up with the teams in the National League Central Division. Appreciate you doing this tonight, man. How's everything going in Pittsburgh?
Things are wet and kind of chilly, but not otherwise. Yeah.
It's the time of year,
right? Pretty much, yeah, typical spring weather. So. Yeah.
Well, not typical from the team here lately, Rob. I mean, the start that the team got off to, I'm sure had everybody, I guess, stressed out. Because I know the expectations weren't really high for the Pirates, but the start of 1-6 certainly had to have people stressed out. But 11-6 since then is a pretty good run.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. We were talking a couple of days ago in the press box when the Pirates came back from that road trip to 500, and you know, in most cities, if you're 500, that means, well, hey, you know, you've won as much as you've lost, and you know, let's see if we can get better. And here, you know, we're planning the parade route. So,
yeah, well, the Cardinals are 13-12, and people are on the edge.
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to be that kind of year in the Central. It's not the strongest division, and I think there's going to be, you know, some twists and turns along the way. But yeah, the Pirates, you know, they're when they brought in Ben Cherington to be GM a couple of years ago, before the COVID season, I guess we can call it that. Mm-hmm. You know, he said from the outset that there's just not enough talent, and not just at the big league system, but all the way down to the lower level, the minors. They just need to infuse talent, and that was kind of a code for saying it's going to hurt for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And we saw it last winter. Josh Bell was traded. Joe Musgrove was traded. Jameson Taillon was traded. All guys that at one point were a big part of the plan here, and now they're part of the plan in a different way, and they brought in a bunch of guys, most of whom, you know, had never played above A ball, and the big league roster was kind of blown up a little bit and kind of patched together. And after, like you said, after a rough start, 1-6 was pretty miserable, but they've got it together, and they're winning lately with small ball, with a little bit of serendipity, you know, some some bloops and dribblers that get by fielders and such. But that's the way this team is going to have to win games. They're going to have to take extra bases. They're going to have to go first to third and string together singles, because it's not a power-hitting team, and it's not a team that's going to overpower you in either offense, defense, or pitching.
One of the things that I've been impressed with in watching from a distance, Rob, is I've really been impressed with some of the bullpen work and guys that maybe don't have the biggest names, but some big arms out there that are giving you zeros.
Yeah, you know, even with Clinton was the GM here a couple of years ago. They just had a knack for putting together good bullpens with guys that you had never heard of, or guys who were washed, you know, I say washed up, if, you know, just never clicked as starters, guys who had been around the block and hadn't clicked with other teams. And, you know, the Pirates a few years ago picked up a guy named Richard Rodriguez.
Yeah.
I believe it was off waivers from the Orioles. And at the time, the Orioles were miserable, and the thinking was, my God, this guy can't even make the Orioles roster. Now here he is. But, you know, he's just kind of gone out, and, I mean, he's the de facto closer, because there's not really a, you know, legit closer on this team, but he's the guy that's doing that job, and he's got a 94-mile-an-hour fastball that, you know, you see it, and you think, ah, oh, you know, there's that beach ball I've been waiting to hit. But he gets it by people. He's one of those guys who can really hit spots, and I think he just outthinks a lot of batters. And it, you know, took him till, you know, 28, 29 years old for that to finally click with him. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's a guy who's really, you know, an unheralded guy who's been getting it done above what anyone expected.
I've been impressed with what I've seen from Dwayne Underwood, too. I know we saw a lot of him in the division when he was with the Cubs, and kind of a guy that was kind of a tweener, right, a prospect that kind of got stuck a little bit at the upper levels. But, man, I mean, you talk about missing bats. It seems like that's all he does.
Yeah, I mean, with the Cubs, he had a real problem with the long ball, it seemed, at times. You know, I think there was some stretches where he just, you know, he would just serve them up. And I think really working with Oscar Marin, who is the Pirates' pitching coach, yeah, you know, I don't want to say, I mean, it's not like they're reinventing the wheel here, but I think they're just approaching guys to really let them pitch to their strengths more. And that's something that, you know, at least here in Pittsburgh, for a couple of years, you know, 2015, 16, 17, 18, mm-hmm. we really didn't see that. It's like it gotten too formulaic, you know. It was, you know, pitch down, just try to get ground balls, you know, retire a guy on three pitches or fewer. And it didn't really take into account a lot of time each guy's individual strengths, but with a guy like Underwood, I think they're kind of letting him, you know, let his off-speed stuff work a little bit more and really set up that fastball. But, like, you know, the biggest thing is he's keeping the ball in the park, and I think just, you know, as you know, confidence goes such a long way with pitchers.
Yeah,
it's one of those things where if you get in a groove, it's easy to stay in that. You know, the Pirates have a couple of guys who might be out of a groove right now, pitching wise. But Underwood's a guy who's just found something that's working.
Rob, tell me about JT Brubaker. I know he's a guy that I haven't seen a whole lot of. It looks like he's got pretty good numbers. Of course, he's starting tomorrow. It'll be him and John Gant in tomorrow night's game. What's he been like?
He was, you know, he was one of their better prospects a couple of years ago, and then had some arm problems, some elbow, shouldery kind of stuff, And for a while, everybody was, you know, fearing the worst that it, you know, it might have to be Tommy John. But he ended up just being shut down for a good period of time. And, you know, he was one of those rare examples of a guy who really, you know, in that case, rest and rehab really was the thing that worked. Not, again, a guy who's going to overpower you, but I think what's working for him is that, one, like you say, he's catching some people off guard because the book isn't too thick on him yet,
yeah.
Having missed a lot of time in the minors, and now really last year was his rookie year, and you only make a dozen starts, and that counts as your full season. So
right. There's
not a big book on him yet, but I think the thing that works best with him is I think he's really able to go up and down well, not just with a fastball, but with the curve as well. And that kind of puts a little bit of a doubt in a batter's mind, changes the eye level. And it sounds so simple, but for a guy who's really just had a dozen or so starts in the big leagues, it can be a little bit intimidating. But he really is – he doesn't seem fazed by that. And he's really been able to maintain that approach. And there's even been, a couple of times he's had some traffic on the bases. He's not gotten flustered like you might expect a younger guy to do. And that's worked in his favor.
Now, on the offensive side, I mean, there are a couple of guys that are having really good, that are off to pretty good starts on the year. And a guy that I really liked as a prospect in Brian Reynolds, I know he's struggled at times in the past, but he seems to be, at least for now, kind of back to what everybody thought he was going to be, right?
Yeah, boy, last year was a miserable season for him. It was bad pretty much from the giddy up with him. And I think he took it personally because, we asked him about it a couple of times during spring training. And you could tell there was a little bit of an edge to him just talking about it. And, that's kind of what you want to see, especially I think if you're a coach, that's what they want to see from a guy when he gets honked off a little bit, mm-hmm. when he has a bad year and some of the expectations go away. But he really, he's fun to watch because he's a guy who would fit on the field in any decade. He would have been a kind of guy who would have been, fun to watch when I grew up watching the game in the 70s and 80s. He would have fit in the 50s and 60s. He's just a very no-nonsense guy. You can see it in the way he plays the outfield. Just kind of goes about his business, makes the plays, never smiles, really. he comes off the field, and you just get that sense of a quiet confidence. But the hitting approach with him really this year has come back so strong. He's a good bat-to-ball guy, and he just has a knack. One of the things you can't coach is he just has a way of putting the ball. I mean, again, I'm going to throw a 60s cliche out there, but hitting it where they ain't.
Yeah.
He just has that ability not to try to do too much or take too much. And again, that goes back, I think, to kind of what this team is like. They can't try to hit a 5-run homer every at bat. They just have to go out. You'll see Colin Moran, who's their cleanup hitter. He gets overshifted a lot,
right.
And we're starting to see a lot where he's bunting down that third base line and just taking the single. And, you don't see that very much, even though that's a gimme hit.
if you can get it down, absolutely.
Most guys don't swallow their pride and do it. Moran does that, and that's kind of what the whole team is buying into.
All right, lastly, I wanted to talk a little bit about Ke'Bryan Hayes because it's one of the things that surprised me during this run is, I look at him as essentially the best player on the team. Certainly the mm-hmm. most gifted, right? I mean, he's a super high-end, top 10 prospect coming into the year, great defender. And the crazy thing is that he hasn't been there for any of this.
Yeah, he went down second game of the season on an awkward swing, kind of tweaked his wrist. And originally they said, well, he'll be back. It's nothing big. He'll be back at the end of that 10 days. It's going on a month now.
Yep.
And he re-aggravated it last, I guess about a week or so ago. When the team was in Detroit, and he's with the alternate site team trying to work his way back, and their game got snowed out, so he made the hour drive or so from Toledo to Detroit to join the big club and took some swings in the cage and hurt it again. But now the reports we hear are that there's no new damage, there's no structural damage. So he's a guy. I mean, they say he'll be back. It's a matter of days and not weeks with him now. And I think getting him back is really it's a huge boost because defensively, there's nobody on the team that's better. Offensively, I think he surprised everybody with the power last year, and maybe we'll see some more of that. And he's just one of those guys that you can tell just kind of gets it and has that little star quality that this team is lacking in a lot of ways.
Yeah, are we looking at any chance of seeing him this weekend, or is it still a little bit more like next week?
I would think it's maybe an outside chance,
okay.
Because we're looking now, we're coming up on almost a month, and he's been with the Old Site Club. They had a workout today, or at least they were going to try to, before the rains really started here in Pittsburgh at PNC. They were going to work out that group. I think maybe there is a chance before this weekend is up that we see Cabrian back in the lineup.
We appreciate all this, Rob. It's been good catching up with you, man. I've appreciated your work in The Athletic. I mean, I follow you and a couple others on the division to try to make sure that I know what's going on around the division. Really enjoy your work. I thank you for doing this, and hopefully we can talk again down the road a little bit.
Sounds good, man. Anytime. Thanks.
You got it. That's Rob Biertemple from The Athletic. Again, if you like me, I like to follow a bunch of different reporters for teams in the National League Central in particular to make sure that, you know, when there's news, when there's something interesting going on, with teams that could impact the Cardinals, that you get some good information, and Rob is great. And I forgot to mention this at the beginning, but you can find him on Twitter at his name. So it's at Rob Biertemple, and it's Biertemple. And if you get through part of that, you'll probably find the right guy. But you can go to The Athletic on the Pittsburgh Pirates page. You'll find him right there as well. All right, so I wanted to get to a quick thing next up about offense and the dominance of pitching this season so far, and it being even more dominant than it has been in recent years. And I saw a really interesting tweet yesterday. I'll tell you a bit about it, but it's basically showing us that the launch angle phenomenon is not impacting the lack of offense. Get to that next up here on KMOX.
Get the inside story on what's happening with your St. Louis Cardinals this season directly from the Redbirds manager. It's the Mike Schilt Show, Sunday mornings at 10:15, sponsored by Bath Fitter, on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
Hi, back in on the Strike Zone here on KMOX. Obviously, that's kind of a fitting name for the topic we're about to hit on, I guess. Strikeouts are obviously at an all-time high, and we've all been talking about why and how do you fix it, and we all have different ideas about what's gone wrong and how do you correct this problem and how do you get more action, right? Because it's not just about like runs scored, because runs scored haven't really changed. If you look at it year by year, it's not much different now than it was 10 or 12 years ago. It's not even that much different than it was 5 years ago. Like, the number of runs per game is about the same. It goes up and down a little bit here and there, but it's really not much of a difference. It was higher during the steroid era, but not ridiculously higher. Right now, we're at a place where it's about the same as it was in the early 90s and late 80s in terms of runs per game. So nobody really seems to have an issue with the number of runs that are scoring. It's a perceived lack of action. And I do think that there is a lack of action, right? I mean, nobody steals bases anymore. That's action. You know, I mean, like, you don't have as many balls in play now. Now, the reason the runs have stayed high is because people hit home runs, right? More home runs, more walks, more strikeouts, the three true outcomes, right? No, and that's the thing that has people, let's just say, edgy, right? That's kind of the nicest way to say it. It's got people on edge because, and I would agree with this, by the way, it's not always the most fun style of baseball. Like, a 5-2 game can be amazing and can also be horribly boring, just depending on the style, right? So I am absolutely all in on the concept that I'd like to find a way to create more action. We've seen other sports do it. The NFL did it, and it worked. And the NBA did it, and it worked. And the NHL did it, and it worked. They all made adjustments at times when offense was struggling that led to more offense, and those games have, those sports have been more entertaining than they were prior. So I don't think this should be a foreign concept to baseball. I do think you need to adapt at times. And they did this. The last time the league batting average was as low as it is now was 1968. Now, granted, it's only 1 month this year. We don't know that it's going to go this way for the next 5 months, but it's just an example. Like, there have already been times in baseball history where they were like, you know what, there just isn't enough action. There isn't enough offense. We need to spruce this up a little bit. So the DH came in the American League. The mound was lowered. Like, they did things to encourage more offense, and in time, they got more offense. And it's funny because you go back to the late 90s and early 2000s, right? You go back to the steroid era. Remember what the theme was then? There's just no pitching anymore. There's just no good. There isn't enough. There aren't enough people on the planet that can pitch in the major leagues. You know, people had all these great theories about expansion had diluted the talent. And there just isn't enough pitching. And it's funny, nobody's saying that anymore, are they? Because technology has ruled the day. We know more now about how to be an effective pitcher. We can measure spin rate. We know how to teach people how to get the result that they need, how to make your breaking ball look exactly like your fastball until it's about two-thirds of the way to the plate, and then it changes. And by then, it's too late for the hitter to tell the difference. So how do you combat that, right? That's kind of where we are right now. And that's why they're doing all of these experiments in the minor leagues, because they want to see what actually might make a difference. But I saw this tweet yesterday, and it's from an account on Twitter called MLB Random Stats. A guy named Jeremy Frank runs it, at MLB Random Stats. So check this out. Tell me, because what people like to focus on when it comes to the three true outcomes, what people focus on so much is ripping the hitters, right? And how many times have we heard it? All these launch angle guys! The launch angle guys! That's why people can't hit, right? That's all you hear. It's all over Twitter, and you'll hear it. And you may be one of those people. And if you think I'm insulting you, I kind of am. Sorry. But from 2002, which is the heart of the steroid era, the middle of the most incredible offensive era we've ever seen. Granted, the reasons were a little dicey, but it was still the most action-packed, most offensive-oriented era in the history of Major League Baseball. Line drive rate in 2002 was 21.2%. Right now, it is 20.9%. So in my world, that's the same. The ground ball rate in 2002 was 43.5%. The ground ball rate now is 43.4%. Again, in my world, that's exactly the same. Guess where we're going with the fly ball rate? 35.3% fly ball rate in 2002. Right now, it is 35.7%. In other words, the profile of batted balls is not different now than it was 20 years ago. So this tells us a couple things. One, it tells us that in the early 2000s, hitters already knew that damage is done in the air, and they were hitting the ball in the air. We've always known that. I played the clip a few weeks back, I might have been a month ago, of Ted Williams talking about launch angle. He didn't use the term launch angle. He used the term slight uppercut as you came to the ball. But that's what launch angle is. You're trying to hit the ball in the air because that's where the hits are. And by the way, a line drive is in the air. It doesn't have to be a high fly ball. A line drive is in the air. So how about this? In 2002, the major league walk rate was 8.8%. Right now, that walk rate is 8.7%. Okay, so you notice this trend, right? So if you have these same exact results, you can't possibly tell me that the approach for major league hitters has dramatically changed in the last 20 years. The difference is that the result is not the same because of strikeouts. So go back to 2002. Strikeout rate in the major leagues was 16.8%. Right now it is 24.5%. So the difference between then and now, even though the batted ball profiles are identical to one another, even though the walk rate is identical from one era to the other, the only thing that's changed is the number of swings and misses. So again, we're going back to a time where there were more home runs hit than ever, more offense, more fly balls. Launch angle was a thing in 2002, even though you may not have heard that term because we didn't measure it back then. It was just guys saying, hit the ball in the air, hit the ball in the air. They didn't talk about launch angle, even though they were doing it. Even though that was what was happening, they just weren't saying the two words, launch and angle. So if everything else is the same, but strikeouts have gone through the roof, what does that teach us about why hitters are struggling right now? Yeah, don't let this be too, don't take too much time overthinking this. It's one thing. Pitchers are better. Pitchers throw harder. they know better about things like spin rates and how to make pitches look the same for longer. And, you know, when you throw harder, that means you have more arm speed, right? More arm speed means your breaking ball is going to be sharper. So that curveball that used to be okay, that curveball now is nasty. That slider that used to be pretty good, that slider is now unhittable. So with more velocity and arm speed comes a better breaking pitch. And now they, I mean, like, look, man, these pitches are now designed in labs. Like, there are pitching labs all over the country where these guys learn how to do these things. And that's the difference. So I guess my point is, stop whining about guys overswinging or trying to hit the ball in the air. That's not the problem. Pitchers are too good. They've had the advantage now because of technology. How do we level that? That's the conversation. Talk more about that next here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, so after having established through the wonders of math that the problem in Major League Baseball right now isn't the hitter's approach, it's not launch angle, it's the fact that pitchers are better than they've ever been, right? Again, fastballs are faster. Breaking balls break sharper because these guys have elite arm speed now. You know, you look around and you're like, oh my God, like look at the Phillies as an example. You know, the Phillies last couple years had one of the worst bullpens in Major League Baseball. And now you look up and you see Coonrod throwing 100 and this kid Brogdon throwing 100 and Jose Alvarado throwing 100. And you're like, all right, so in a year they added three guys. And I know that Coonrod was an acquisition this offseason, that Brogdon's been coming up in their system. But the point is that, you know, just in a year or two, they've added three guys that throw 100. You look at the Cardinals bullpen. You got Alex Reyes with an average fastball at 98 miles an hour. And of course, you got Hicks at 100. And you've got Cabrera in the upper 90s. I mean, like, every team now has three or four of those guys. And some of them are in the rotation. I mean, Jacob deGrom is in his 30s. He's throwing 102 as a starter. So how do you combat that is the question. Because this is the crux of the problem. Pitching is more advanced than hitting at this moment in time in baseball history. How do you combat that? You can't just out-train it. Now, you can try, and there are a lot of training techniques that are in use, even at the youth levels, to work on hitting velocity. But really what it comes down to is whether or not the human eye can tell the difference between pitches quickly enough. And it's really hard to do right now with the way that pitchers are taught how to tunnel their pitches so that the slider and the sinker, they come out of the same spot, they stay the same until about two-thirds of the way there, and then they split. And it's the same thing with the curveball and the four-seam fastball. So you have less time than you've ever had in baseball history to decide whether or not it's a pitch you should swing at. How do we combat that? And it's tough because you could say, well, move the mound back. And by the way, I'm going to talk about this at some point next week, but Eno Saris of The Athletic did a great piece about this today, about moving the mound back and the pluses and the minuses. So sure, it would help perceived velocity, right? It would slow pitches down by about 2 miles an hour, a little bit less than 2 miles an hour. But it also increases the movement on breaking pitches. And a sinker's going to sink more and a changeup's going to dive more. And that's going to be a problem for hitters too. So there's no easy solution to making things easier. There's only, to me, a couple of things that make sense. One is, I think you need to go back to the strike zone the way that it was in the steroid era. Do you guys remember that strike zone? The one where if it was at the belt, it was high. Where it's basically just below the knees to the top of the thighs, like that was the strike zone. They need to shrink the strike zone, but more importantly, move it down so that the top end comes down and maybe even extend the bottom end a little bit. So this is where Derek Gould and I argued, right? Derek argued lower the strike zone, right? Bring the bottom end down and make it bigger. And my argument was, no, make the strike zone smaller. I think the compromise between the two ideas now might be the right idea, which is keep the strike zone the same size, but move it down for a couple of reasons. One, the high fastball is impossible to hit at high velocity with a high spin rate. You can't get to it. There are only a handful of hitters who can. So let's move that down a little. Now, the lower the pitch is, the more your bat will naturally accelerate downward because of this wonderful thing called gravity. Because gravity will help you accelerate down, but if you have to go flat or up, you don't get that extra little help. You got to do all the work yourself. So if we make the zone a little lower, you get a little extra help from gravity trying to make something happen. Do that. Maybe considering limiting the shifts a little bit. I'm not sold that that would work, but maybe you consider it and see how it works in the minor leagues. But guys, please stop yelling at hitters. It's not their fault that pitchers basically got amazing overnight. All right, we'll get more into this tomorrow. Hey, tomorrow, Cardinals and Pirates here on KMOX 535 for the first pitch. You guys have a great night. Overnight America with Ryan Reckers next on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.